The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Myers.
Delighted that you are here 12 minutes after 7. My email's bill@billmyershow.com. And Wayne from Brands Pass ended up emailing me a little bit ago because we were talking about how Medford 549C is having this survey. They're talking with parents, trying to get a dialogue going, I guess, about what should we do about phones in school. Should they be restricted? How should they be? Starting to see more research that, phones are the problem that most sane people realized it always was. You know, just saying, social media and banging and bonging all throughout the day is interrupting the educational process. But Wayne writes, Bill, I work at a private school part-time. No phones. No phones for the students, I guess. Parents can call the office or go to office, and the students can then be contacted. Also, each teacher in this private school is given a charged two-way radio every morning for emergency use. Interesting. Wayne, there are some ways to do this without having, I guess the parents that have their kids in this private school appreciate that and know it, and they're not able to hover over them all day and text message back and forth and et cetera, et cetera. So it can be done. All right. Appreciate the email. That's an email of the day sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson and Central Point Family Dentistry. Central Point Family Dentistry is next to the Mazatlan Mexican Restaurant, Freeman Way in Central Point. While you wait, crowns are available. Pretty good stuff. He has an in-house lab there. CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com. All right. Let us go to the Supreme Court of the United States conversation yesterday. It was oral arguments, and Kevin Starrett, he wasn't there, but he was certainly watching it. Kevin Starrett, Oregon Firearms Federation. Hello, Kevin. Welcome back.
Thank you, Bill.
What did we hear yesterday? I saw a little bit of news coverage on it, and I saw a lot of ridiculousness that I thought, but this is the United States of America. Ridiculousness is sort of, I think, that standard policy these days. But it had to do with the so-called ghost gun, the dreaded ghost gun, the ghost gun that, the ghost gun, which, people make, and it magically jumps out of pockets and kills people. They're just so dangerous, and the Biden administration wants to end them, of course.
Well, welcome to the United States, 2024, where the unimaginable is commonplace. But
pretty much.
The case is Vanderstock versus Garland, and there's so much going on, we could never get to it all, but really what it comes down to is a matter of the court being asked to come up with definitions.
Okay.
And what struck me yesterday, listening to the oral arguments, was especially listening to, our newest Supreme Court judge, we have tasked a person with coming up with definitions who cannot define what a woman is. And we're going to ask her to define some complex firearms issues. It's the irony is just unbelievable. But there was an awful lot going on here. And what the argument is about is whether or not the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms can redefine terms so that ATF, which has long been tasked with regulating firearms, now wants to regulate things that someday could become firearms. And it's the government's position that these devices that people have been buying, which are unfinished parts, that can then be, with a fair amount of effort, be finished into parts which would be a component of a firearm, that those are actually guns themselves.
The actual components, the parts, the parts, the nuts, the bolts, the barrel, or the unfinished barrel, all this stuff.
What they're actually referring to is one part, which is what they're terming the frame or receiver. But here's another problem.
Okay.
Is that they don't even agree on what a finished frame or receiver is. So I want to avoid getting hyper technical because it's radio and you can't really see these things. But the government has decided, they've declared on each specific firearm that is sold commercially, one part which they consider the gun, which must be regulated and have a serial number and be registered with the state, which requires a background check to acquire.
Okay, now let me interject here. I see where you're going to. It's different for different firearms. Some firearms have the serial number on just the actual frame, if it's a pistol, let's say a handgun, that sort of thing. Others have the serial number, which is considered the firearm on the trigger control part. Like, I think, like, the Sig Sauer 320, yeah, from what I recall, you know, it has a mechanism that can come out of that frame, and you can put it in different frames. So it's like one firearm, but you can put it in all sorts of different handles, that kind of thing, right?
Right. The main problem is that the ATF and the state keeps trying to define things which really can't be easily defined, because the guns are all different, the parts are all different. So they come up with a definition that doesn't apply to many things that they are regulating. And it, for example, the most popular rifle in the United States, of course, is the AR-15. Mm-hmm. Well, the AR-15 has a part that the state has always said must have a serial number, which they call the lower receiver. Well, if you look at the definition for receiver that the ATF came up with, that part doesn't meet it. The part is, it is not a receiver in the eyes of the ATF, which has caused all kinds of issues, because they've arrested people for having things that are not illegal. This has been going on for years. You can't really come up with simple definitions for this. And this is why I think the whole argument, this is the absurdity of the American court system, is they're arguing about the wrong things. So every time the ATF comes up with a definition, I'll give you a perfect example. You can take two shotguns, which are identical. And by identical, I mean identical in every single way. They are identical firearms, with the possible exception of the serial number. Okay. Those two firearms will be treated differently by the ATF. If it's a shotgun with a barrel that's below the legal length, those two shotguns will be treated. One will require federal permission and a $200 tax stamp. The other will require federal permission and a $5 tax stamp. They are identical firearms. The only change was that one came from the distributor with a full stock on it, and one came with a full stock and an accessory pistol grip, and the other came with just a pistol grip. As soon as you put the pistol grip on that one that came with the stock, you now have a completely different firearm in the eyes of the state. And for years, they came up with definitions that were hyper-technical, didn't apply to a lot of things, and then manufacturers came up with slightly different versions that no longer apply to their definitions. So for just to make this as confusing as possible, if you go to your local sporting goods store and buy a shotgun that has a pistol grip, the ATF does not even consider it a shotgun.
It doesn't.
That's not a shotgun in the eyes of the ATF. So because of these hyper-technical definitions, now the court's been tasked with deciding, does the ATF have the right to regulate things that someday might become a gun, a part that's not finished? And the ATF's position has been, the government's position is that, oh, these things are very, very easy to convert. There's no problem converting these things into fully functional firearms, and therefore we have the right to regulate it. And in the arguments, they made some pretty ridiculous assertions, like all you have to do is drill one hole. But irrespective of that, irrespective of whether or not it's just one hole or 8 hours worth of machining, the state now has to determine at one point a piece of plastic or a piece of metal becomes a firearm in the eyes of the state. And it's not possible. It's not a single point at which one – it's like, imagine, you know, you're on a sailing ship in the 1800s, and over time that ship wears out. So every board on the hull of the ship is replaced one at a time, and eventually the masts are replaced, till no original part of that ship was there. Is that the original ship? And so there were examples that were made that made no sense at all.
Yeah, there were a couple that kind of caught my eye. Like, I think it was Alito. I think it was Sam Alito. He came back there. Okay, so if I have a couple of eggs, what do you say, a couple of eggs, and some bacon or whatever it is on the plate, is that an omelet? Is that an omelet if I'm just holding two eggs and am I holding an omelet? Something like that, wasn't there? A question like that.
I guess it was Barrett who said, well, what if that comes from, you know, Get Fresh store, and it all comes as one thing?
Oh, Hello Fresh. So if all the parts come from Hello Fresh, then is that an omelet? If all the parts of an omelet are in a Hello Fresh box, right?
And there were comparisons to cars with no engines. If you take the engine out of a car, you still call it a car. Well, yeah, that's true. But if you took a 1969 Pontiac and you removed the seats and the steering wheel and you took the engine and transmission out and you removed the differential, the drive shaft and the front end, and that car was sitting on the ground in your backyard, you'd still call it a car, right? You probably would call it that because what else are you likely to call it? But you wouldn't consider it something that could be driven down the street and therefore should be regulated. So the whole exercise of trying to come up with these definitions is absurd. Now, in fact, the state shouldn't be in the business of regulating any of this anyway, but that ship has kind of sailed. But there were so many things that were said. You know, one of the things they brought up was they said, okay, there's been a 1,000-fold increase in these, quote, ghost guns being recovered from the scenes of crimes. Well, first of all, let us begin with the premise, which I operate on all the time, that everything the state tells you is a lie, period, full stop. We know that. We know they're lying to us about everything all the time.
I think that's a reasonable first step to take. Okay, now where do we go?
Okay, so you say there's a 1,000-fold increase of these guns being recovered at the scenes of a crime. But first of all, the state makes no difference between guns that were made, personally manufactured firearms with no serial numbers, and commercially manufactured firearms that had the serial numbers ground off, like the gun that was used by the CIA asset in the recent assassination attempt against Trump at the golf course. Okay, so they make no distinction between that, so they pump up their numbers there. Second of all, whether or not this being recovered at the scene of a crime means they found a gun someplace where a person was shot or a gun was confiscated from somebody they arrested, they make no distinction between that either. So their position is that we need to have serial numbers on firearms because that's the only way we can trace these things. But forever, law enforcement hasn't had an issue where when a serial number was obliterated, they couldn't trace it anyway. So this is not a new issue at all. So that whole thing is a complete canard. But then there were all these other things. For example, they brought up the idea of if somebody was transferring one of these objects and didn't know it was illegal, what would they be prosecuted? And so the technical court term for that is mens rea, which means your state of mind. And then weirdly, to illustrate this point, they brought up a case called Abramski. And I'm very familiar with Abramski because we filed an amicus brief on this case. Abramski was a cop in Virginia who purchased a firearm because he got a police discount that he wanted his uncle in Pennsylvania to have.
Okay, now, so that's technically a straw purchase, right?
But wait a minute. It's not a straw purchase. Well, okay, yes. The Supreme Court decided that it was a straw purchase. But listen, he purchased the gun and paid for it. He then shipped the gun to a dealer in Pennsylvania where his uncle underwent a background check to take possession of the firearm.
Oh, wait a minute. That's not a straw purchase then. That's not a straw purchase.
But the Supreme Court said it was a straw purchase. The Supreme Court said it was a straw purchase because he paid for the gun with his own check and then was reimbursed by his uncle. Now, at the time, before Scalia was surprisingly offed, Scalia said, well, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. But the rest of the court found that Abramski was, in fact, guilty of a straw purchase, even though he made every effort to comply with every law. Now, this was a case that they used to illustrate the whole idea of state of mind, which turns everything completely on its head. It makes no sense at all. And so there's instances. The other thing they said was, okay, so the plaintiffs in this case, which were, you know, Second Amendment Foundation, Firearms Policy Coalition, and some people who manufacture these things, said, well, if we can outlaw something because in the eyes of the state, it can be, quote, readily convertible into a gun, which there's no real definition for that. That is like what the average person could do with the average tools in the average amount of time. And I assure you, there's no two people are in the same situation. You know, for example, I have a garage full of tools, but none of them are appropriate for gunsmithing. They're all woodworking tools. So what difference does that make? But the position that the plaintiffs was taking was that if the state can regulate anything by saying it can be converted to something else, then it can instantly outlaw all AR-15s by saying they can be converted to machine guns. And the state's position, the government's position, was basically, oh, no, we would never do that.
Oh, yes, they would. Oh, of course the government would do that if they could.
Well, of course the government. I mean, these are the same people. The ATF are the same people who in March murdered. They outright murdered the director of the airport in Arkansas that's named after Arkansas's most famous rapist and his wife. All right. They flat out murdered this guy. Right. They went to his house at 6 a.m, taped over his doorbell, started shooting, murdered him, dragged his wife out in her pajamas where she was kept for 4 hours, not allowed to see him as he died, used the bathroom. OK, so, yeah, these people would not do that. Another absurd assertion they made was that in the absence of a clear definition about whether something was or was not legal, you could always contact the ATF and ask for an opinion.
Wait a minute. Okay, this is the same ATF that gave, when I bought a bump stock a number of years ago.
Exactly.
Remember the bump stock? And it came with a letter from the ATF that says, this is a perfectly legal firearm accessory, yada, yada, yada. And then it was magically turned into a felon if you had one of those when they changed their mind a few years later. Okay.
Sitting on my very desktop is a letter from the ATF saying that pistol braces are totally legal. Perfectly legal. They don't constitute any kind of crime at all. Well, then they said, if you have a pistol brace, you're going to prison. So, yes, of course they will do this. The whole thing is completely absurd. But on top of that, you can ask the ATF for a definition of anything. If you were in possession of something or weren't sure if it was legal, the ATF will not respond to your request. They'll only respond to the request of a manufacturer who sends them an item that's, you know, a potential something they're potentially going to build. So that whole concept is completely bizarre. On top of that, if you were to call right now as just Bill Meyer, private citizen, call the ATF in, say, Portland, and if there's usually nobody working there, maybe get somebody in Boise or Seattle, and ask them a question. If you get an ATF agent on the phone, the chances of you getting an accurate answer are about 4%.
It's kind of like calling the IRS, same sort of thing, and asking for tax advice, right?
Well,
that kind of thing.
Precisely. I once called, couldn't get anyone in Portland. I got an ATF agent, I believe in Boise, female agent, and asked a question. And she gave me advice and said something was legal, which is absolutely a felony. All right. On another occasion, I contacted them with a question about what is essentially, without getting too technical here, what this ATF calls AOW or any other weapon. And a question about how that compared with something else. The person, the agent, this is an enforcement agent with alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, had no idea what this was and had to look it up online. And when they saw it online, still didn't know what it was.
And these are the people that hold our lives in their hands when they do investigations and raids. And of course, the Biden administration wants them to have even more ability to redefine. To take it back there to this Supreme Court oral arguments, it sounds like it was kind of an excrement show overall. Do you agree with the so-called mainstream news media, in other words, government propagandists like AP, that say Supreme Court seems to be open to upholding regulations on ghost guns? And do you think that, the justices that you heard arguing yesterday, there's a majority of them in favor? What would you say?
I have found that it is very, very dangerous to try to predict how the court will rule based on the questions that were asked. So That's really a crapshoot. One of the problems with listening to arguments in the Supreme Court is there's no visual. So it's you're kind of guessing who's asking questions unless it's clear, and it's not always clear. But I would say that it did sound that there were justices who were leaning towards the idea that, yes, these objects are easily convertible and therefore it's legitimate to regulate them. But this is the wrong argument. This is not an argument we should be having because it's absolutely undefinable. At what exact point does something become something else? And if you drive up to a stop sign and there's a white line across the road, when your car crosses that white line, there's a definitive thing that has happened. It's clear you crossed that white line.
That's right.
But there's no connection with when aluminum is mined out of the ground to at what point it becomes in the mine. We had this on our own case with 114 where they're saying, well, a magazine can be converted. And then they're arguing over, what's easy, what's readily. There is no specific definition. And then if the court is tasked, and you know, Jackson basically said, I don't want to have to make this decision, the court shouldn't be doing this. But if the court then does make a decision that something happens at a specific time, that is still completely undefinable, you know, like what the average person can do with the average tools. And not only that, but of course, the state's position was, oh, this is super easy. You just you just cut off a tab with a dog grooming tool. Now, let's say that's even true. There's still, I mean, I sent you some photos yesterday. I have.
Oh, yeah. You have photos of gun parts that have been made into art, right?
Yeah. I mean, I have two AR-15 uppers that I made into a lamp. Lovely, lovely job, I think. You know, there's an unfinished lower receiver that somebody gave me years ago that I would never turn into a firearm because, frankly, I don't have the desire or the skill, but it's an art object in my office. So while it's true that the most people who are purchasing these things are doing it with the intent to make a finished firearm, that does not mean that they are finished firearms. And the other point that the state made, which was absolutely hilarious, well, if it wasn't sending people to prison, was that the only reason that people buy these things and make firearms is to engage in criminal activity.
Baloney.
Which is clearly not the case.
Yeah.
Their position is, well, we've confiscated these quote ghost guns from the scenes of crime, and we've confiscated this many of them, which means that they're only used for crimes. But that doesn't take into account the vastly large number that they don't interact with, because then there are hands of people who are not using them in crime. So it's just completely fake. And then they said, once we made them illegal, the market for them evaporated, which means it was only criminals getting them. Well, the market evaporated because you made them illegal.
Yeah. And no one's going to manufacture it and intentionally ship this stuff. Now, here is where I think ultimately this is going to go. I don't know how they're going to rule on this, but you know where I see the future of this firearm situation? It doesn't matter what kind of regulations they come up with here, Kevin. I think the 3D printing world is going to make this moot. And I know that they're talking about trying to get the 3D printing companies. Well, we need to get you involved here to not let your printers print things in the shape of firearms. I think it's going to fail. I think this is a sign of, in some ways, the collapse of authority. Continuing collapse of authority that they're trying to get their last remaining fingers on these kind of things. And I know
it already has failed.
Yeah,
it already has failed. Defense Distributed put an end to that. Now, granted, it's a little bit more complicated and expensive for people to get their hands on 3D printers, but they're getting cheaper and cheaper all the time. That the fact is that is just the way it is. And that was the whole point of what Defense Distributed did, was to try to, you know, put an end to this nonsense. Ultimately, what needs to happen is people need to be held responsible for their behavior.
Indeed.
And the fact is that the vast majority of people who constructed functioning firearms from these parts were not doing it to commit crimes. They were doing it because they very wisely do not trust the state. The state that has told us that Jeffrey Epstein committed suicide, the state that refuses to help people in flood zones in the South while sending billions to foreign countries, they do not trust them. And they wanted to have firearms that were not part of the nexus of the government control system. That's what it was about. And the state's position that these are simply crime guns is a lie, as is everything else the state tells us about everything.
Well, when it comes right down to it, the state is a crime family. So, I don't know. You just have to consider the source here, Kevin. I appreciate the analysis from that, and we'll have to keep an eye on this. I know that Oregon has already banned this stuff, right? This already happened in the, first of the month? Or was it last month?
And actually, just yesterday, I got the updated complaint on our lawsuit against that. That will be a completely different issue in Oregon, because this case yesterday was not even a Second Amendment case. It was a case about whether or not the ATF overstepped its regulatory authority. And our case is a Second Amendment case, as is our case against 114 in the state and the federal courts, which is, you know, I will tell you, I despise having our battles in court, because, you know, a handful of politically motivated people get to control your life. Whereas legislative fights, at least win or lose, we can hold people accountable, which we cannot do in the courts. But unfortunately, in Oregon, where there is no Republican opposition, there is no place left to have these battles except writing a lot of checks to lawyers in court.
And which is why I would still advise you, please help out Oregon Firearms Federation, OregonFirearms.org, on these particular fights, because the fights aren't happening in the legislature, as Kevin just duly noted, and it's actually happening in the courts, okay? OregonFirearms.org. Do you have a place in there for the contributions and the various different lawsuits that are going on?
Yeah, there's right on the front of our main page is a link that says join the fight, and that will take you directly to our secure donations page.
All right, very good. Thank you very much, Kevin. And like I said, yeah, I'm not surprised that we were hearing craziness about this. Now, do you ever get that feeling that Bruner decision from a few years ago that everyone was talking about? It's Bruner, right?
Bruen.
Thank you. All right. The Bruen decision that was supposedly declaring the Second Amendment an individual right, is that just getting ignored everywhere, or is it just me?
Yes. No, it's absolutely being ignored everywhere. And this is where we're in a situation now. We have complete judicial anarchy where the lower courts have simply extended a middle finger to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court does not have an army or a police force. And so nothing, you know, everybody on the left has just decided that if the system does not concur with their beliefs, they will ignore it. And it's extremely dangerous time to be in, because there is now no ultimate authority that you can go to with the expectation of having justice served, because our system has been completely destroyed by the left's refusal to accept any sort of rules.
And hence the fight must continue. All right, Kevin, we appreciate the take as always. We'll have you back. All right, be well. Thanks.
Thank you.
Kevin Starrett, it is 7:39 at KMED. Hi, this is Bill Meyer. Always appreciate you listening, no matter the time. Live 6 to 9 weekdays on 106.3 KMED and 99.3 KBXG. I'm here for you. But life has a way of getting busy, so if you miss a show and you want to catch up, or you just have a different schedule, well, that's what my podcasts are for. The last 3 months or so of my shows available for free download and sharing on KMED.com or BillMeyerShow.com. Podcasts are sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They're helping keep you current. Find out about their services on ClouserDrilling.com.
I'm Travis Snyder, managing partner at Precision Electric. In Jackson County, we continue to have a housing crisis, just not enough units being built for our ever-changing and ever-growing community. Randy has the hands-on experience to be able to reach out to development community, work well with others, and including Salem, to make sure we get policies in place that help all of us grow. I support Randy Sparacino for Jackson County Commissioner.
Vote Randy Sparacino for Jackson County Commissioner. Paid for by Sparacino for Oregon. ID 20676.
Joel here from Mother Ford and Truck Center, and I got a couple unbeatable Joel specials on Ford trucks this month. Number one special is an all-new F-150 4x4 for only $377 a month. It's a 36-month lease, which means you get to drive it for 3 years, come back, and trade it in on a new one for only $377 a month for a Ford F-150 4x4. Hey, pay a little more per month, and you can supersize your Ford truck to F-350 four-wheel drive diesel. That's only $555 a month for a 36-month lease, and that's my second truck special this month. When you think Ford, I want you to think Butler Ford. Come down and see me in Ashland, because no one knows how to make a better deal on new Ford F-150 Super Duty or SUV than me. That's probably why Butler Ford is the highest Google-rated Ford dealership in Oregon. Butler Ford and Truck Center, just 12 short minutes down the freeway in Ashland, right off of exit 19, where we got your truck, your SUV, your certified pre-owned, and super low payment.
36-month leases for $7,500 cash or trade due to signing, excluding tax, license, title of 250, dealer, dock fee, on stock numbers 598.35 and selling price of 51.72, and stock number 59.809 and selling price of 69.710. After all rebates and discounts, on approved credit through Ford, provided financing. See dealer for details.
Hi, this is Bill Meyer, and I'm with Charisse from No Wires Now, your Dish Premier local retailer. It's time to switch to Dish.
If you have DirecTV or cable TV, call me today to see how I can save you money. Plus, I'll lower your internet and cell phone bills.
And those offers in the mail from Dish, you can go through No Wires Now for those.
Call me at 541-680-5875.
Call Charisse like I did, or visit their showroom off Biddle Road in Medford, nowiresnow.com. Restrictions apply. Call for details. Internet and cell phone service not provided by Dish.
News brought to you by Millett Construction, specializing in foundation repair and replacement. Get on solid ground. Visit MilletteConstruction.com.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. You have just shy of a week left to make sure that you're registered to vote for the November 5th general election. The deadline is next Tuesday. If you've moved, changed your mailing address or name, you need to update your registration. Ballots can't be forwarded. Voter registration and updates can be completed online at OregonVotes.com. ballot.gov or go to your county elections office. The trial of Negasi Zuberi is underway. He's accused of abducting two women last year, taking them to his Klamath Falls home, and sexually assaulting them. The government's expected to call about 70 witnesses. Zuberi's being held in the Jackson County Jail. The trial in federal court in Medford is expected to last 3 weeks. Oregon voters routinely ranked public education tops of their collective priority list in previous polls and wanted policymakers in Salem to deal with the problem. Well, in a new survey of 500 Oregon residents, only 2% identified education as a top concern, far below homelessness, mental health, and the cost of housing and living. Bill Lennon, KMED.
743 at KMED. Some other news that came in overnight. The U.S. budget deficit, you want to take a guess at how high it is for 2024? Rises to $1.8 trillion. This in the New York Times. Now, I think they can get the financial stuff right there. Yeah, America's federal budget deficit balloons to $1.8 trillion. In other words, they borrow $1.8 trillion, reaching the highest level in 3 years. This according to new Congressional Budget Office estimates released yesterday. The increase from last year's $1.7 trillion deficit came as tax revenue failed to keep pace with rising costs of government programs. All right, like sending money to foreign nations rather than taking care of people in North Carolina and or Florida. But I digress. I would just take this as yet another indicator. Make sure you have some precious metals because they're making it very clear that they do not have. That's one of the reasons, one of the many reasons people buy precious metals. It's the just in case of currency destruction where they're going. Now, hopefully it never happens in our lifetime. They're able to keep those plates spinning. But some of your wealth should be from gold and silver tucked away in your physical possession. And Jay Austin & Company, Gold and Silver Buyers in Ashland and Grants Pass is where you go to get it. The recognized experts. You can call 482-3715, one of my oldest, most trusted sponsors here. In fact, I'm going to be going over there in the next few days and adding to the collection, so to speak, okay? Because the central banks are buying it, and the big money's buying it. Yeah, there's a reason for this because, yep, they're happy to play the market, the stock market, and speculate. But it's good to have some tucked away, too. This is the just in case. If it's 1.8, that's okay. It's sustainable, right? 1.8 trillion, 1.92 trillion. Everyone will just continue to loan the indispensable former federal representative republic. They're just going to keep loaning it money, right? Maybe they will. Maybe they will. Maybe we'll still remain the cleanest dirty shirt. But keep some physical gold and silver just in case those plates stop spinning, all right? Jay Austin & Company, 1632 Ashland Street in Ashland, 6th and G in downtown Grants Pass. All right? All right. Palate cleanser time. I'll tell you what, let's do the Diner 62 Real American Quiz. We have a great bit of American history that we're going to get you set up with a $20 gift certificate from Diner 62 where you can get all those amazing breakfast favorites, omelets, skillets, waffles, biscuits, and gravy. Amazing salads, by the way, too. I think the taco salad's one of my favorites that they have. Crispy chicken sandwiches are back on the menu. Half ham special for 11:15 Monday through Friday during the morning show, 6 to 9. And you can get it, 770-5633, multiple choice question. And if you haven't won it in the last 60 days, you can win it next. Call now.
We're thrilled to announce we're back with our Veterans Metal Roof Giveaway. After the joy of giving away our first roof, we're honoring veterans with a free custom metal roof. One deserving veteran will win this amazing gift absolutely free. Don't delay. Enter now. The contest ends November 5th. Winner will be chosen on Veterans Day. Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc., where quality and community come together. Visit StephenWestfallRoofingInc.com for entries, details, and rules.
The song Our House by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young only reached number 30 on the Billboard Hot 100 in 1970, but it stands the test of time. If you have a very, very, very fine house, Millett Construction wants to help you keep it that way. So if the vase that you bought today looks a bit tilted on the table, it might be a sloping floor due to a shifting foundation. Call Millett Construction for an inspection and estimate to permanently correct the issue so your house stands the test of time, too. MilletteConstruction.com.
Oregon Truck and Auto Authority is your work truck and van headquarters. Proudly offering Adrian Steel interior shelving packages, partitions, and the best ladder racks in the business. Integrate a bed slide or decked drawer system to boost your efficiency. Also featuring the largest selection of commercial fiberglass and metal truck canopies from leading manufacturers such as ARE, SmartCap, Century, and more. Come see Oregon Truck and Auto Authority today and take your efficiency to the next level.
Jackson County, your vote counts. Ballots must be postmarked or deposited in an official ballot drop box no later than 8 p.m. on November 5th, but we recommend mailing it by October 29th. No postage is needed to mail your ballot, and don't forget to sign.
Hello, I'm Chris Walker, your Jackson County Clerk. For more information, visit jacksoncountyor.gov/elections. Your County Clerk's Office, making sure your vote counts.
Hi, I'm Deb with Father and Son Jewelry, and I'm on KMED.
Diner 62 Real American Quiz. And we have a great question. It was actually yesterday in history, back in 1945. And let's go to Chris first. Hello, Chris. How you doing?
Not too bad. I'm kind of nervous, but I'll get over myself.
Chris, don't be nervous. We're all among friends. It's multiple choice. I actually knew the answer to this question. Maybe you'll guess it. I don't know. But it was yesterday in history, October 8th, 1945. There was the first patent filed for the microwave. Pretty big deal. It was Raytheon Manufacturing Company filed a patent for what is now a staple kitchen appliance, the microwave oven. Now, of course, Raytheon, we know them now as being sponsors of practically every military-industrial complex Congress critter. Did I say that out loud? I think I did. Okay. But anyway, the microwave. But they say it was invented by Raytheon employee Percy Spencer. Spencer dropped out of grammar school when he was 12 years old, Chris, to work at a weaving mill. He joined the U.S. Navy at the age of 18 as a radio operator. And while he was there, he studied trigonometry, calculus, physics, and a bunch more. And after World War I, honorably discharged. And so he lands at the Raytheon Company. And there he worked with his colleagues to produce equipment for radios and radars, specifically the magnetron, which emits microwaves. But as with many inventions, Chris, sometimes accidents at work lead to major discoveries. Spencer stumbled upon the fact that the microwaves heated something. What was that something that got heated up so that he figured out how to make a microwave oven? Was it A, a candy bar? Was it B, a waxed Dixie cup filled with water? Was it C, pomade in his hair? Was it D, a sandwich? Or was it E, honey for his tea? It's one of those five. What do you think?
Well, I'll go with honey because we need more bees.
Yeah, honey, you need more bees. You know, microwaves work really well on re-liquefying honey, but no, it's not that one, Chris. I'm sorry. It's a good guess, though. Let me go to Tom. Hello, Tom. How you doing?
Just fine, thank you.
All right. So, Tom, we're talking about the first something that got melted or heated up by the microwave, and then they figured out, hey, we got something here, all right? Was it a candy bar, a waxed Dixie cup filled with water, pomade in Spencer's hair, or a sandwich that got hot? What happened?
I think it was water in a Dixie cup.
Water in a Dixie cup. No, it wasn't that either. It wasn't that either. But yet, these are all very plausible good guesses, all right? So it's not the Dixie cup. Let me go to Jack. Hello, Jack.
Hey, Bill.
So we're talking about candy bar, pomade in his hair, or was it Spencer's sandwich? What do you say?
I say the Spencer sandwich.
Spencer's sandwich. That makes as much sense as anything. No, it wasn't the sandwich either. So we're down to either pomade, hair pomade, or a candy bar. So, Vicky, you get the final shot at this. How you doing?
How are you?
I'm great. You're 50-50 on this one. So was it Spencer's candy bar that got heated up, or was it his hair pomade that melted? What do you think?
You know what? I think back in the day, I remember when my dad was in the Navy, he had so much gunk in his hair, so I'm going to go with the gunk in his hair.
You go with the gunk in the hair, the pomade. No, it wasn't that either.
Dang.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Let me go to the next person. Hi, who's this?
Lou.
Lou? You said Lou? All right, yeah. Lou, was it a candy bar, or was it a candy bar that melted in the microwave?
I'm going to take a wild guess, candy bar.
Yeah, you are right, sir. Spencer, loved payday candy bars. He'd bring them to work, and then one day he was experimenting with a magnetron, and he found that the microwave radiation emitted, it melted the peanut and caramel sauce that he carried in his pocket. He then tried other things like unpopped popcorn, cold food, and water. He found that the microwaves could cook or reheat them through materials like wax paper, plastic, and glass. And after that discovery, the first microwave was built, 6 feet tall, over 750 pounds. Boy, you're not going to fit that in your kitchen, huh? And so, yeah. But, 6 feet tall. It kind of reminds me of conversations about the old original hard drives for computers. They were like the size of rooms. It was amazing. But anyway, eventually the patent was granted to Raytheon for the radar range in 1950 is when that actually ended up happening. So that's where it came. And so you hang on, Lou, and we're going to send you over to Diner 62. I'm going to get your address here in just a moment. By the way, this is an interesting little fact about the microwave. At the time, this is 1950, the original radar range cost $5,000. $5,000, that's around 52 grand in today's money, all right? But due to public concerns about microwave radiation, as well as the size and high price point, the microwave really stayed out of most people's homes until 1967 when Amana debuted the first tabletop microwave, and that cost $500. And even then, $500 was a lot of money in 1967, but still, just amazing. Amazing story there. It's 7:53 at KMED, 99.3 KBXG.
One of each K4 VIN 014548 MSRP 24145 Telluride VIN 563162 MSRP 42935872 10K miles per year, zero security deposit, all incentives and discounts to dealer plus tax, title, license, 150 registration, processing fee, trading in a vehicle will not eliminate your debt, negative equity applied to new loan balance, ends 10/31/24.
It's time to trade in and take off in a new Kia at Kia Medford. Trade in your old vehicle for cash, then shop our huge selection of brand new Kias. Take off in the all-new 2025 Kia K4 LXS, just $169 a month lease, or a new 2024 Kia Telluride S all-wheel drive, only $239 a month lease. Plus, once we make a deal at Kia Medford, we'll pay off your trade no matter how much you owe. Need credit? Go to KiaMedford.com to get pre-approved in less than 30 seconds with no effect on your credit score. Then join us in the fight against breast cancer with $100 of every sale going to Access, a charity right here in Medford. Trade in and take off at Kia Medford. Click KiaMedford.com.
Connection, opportunity, possibility. It's what we all want. Spectrum has built a world where anything is possible, with products and services designed to work better together for a seamless connectivity experience. A connection to family and friends, a connection to education, and a connection to new opportunities. So there's no limit to how big we can dream. That's Life Unlimited. That Spectrum.
For over four decades, Dusty's Transmissions has been your trusted source for top-notch service. Family-owned since 1979, Dusty's has been keeping Southern Oregon running smoothly. With their expertise and dedication, your vehicle is in the best hands, whether it's maintenance or repairs. Trust Dusty's Transmissions to get you back on the road with confidence. Visit DustysTransmissions.com or stop by the shop today. Experience the difference four decades of excellence can make. 250 North Front Street, Central Point.
Dusty's Transmission. You'll always find me hanging around there.
Freddy's Diner in Old Town Eagle Point is a family diner designed to please everyone in the family. Along with 13 burgers, there's 8 fresh sandwiches and 7 different melts, all served with fresh-cut fries. There's Carolina chicken smothered in mushrooms, onions, bacon, cheddar cheese, and honey mustard sauce. There's 7 seafood baskets, hickory smoked ribeyes, chicken fried chicken and steak, and so much more. You're invited to Freddy's Diner on Main in Old Town Eagle Point. Open 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. every day for lunch and dinner.
Hi, I'm Rob.
And I'm Deborah.
And this is our TimberTech story. We built the TimberTech deck. The deck floats into the landscape and looks like real wood. We did it all ourselves.
It was fun to just kind of figure it out. And we're still married.
Still married. TimberTech lets us enjoy a space and an experience that we couldn't ever enjoy before.
Feels like a new lease on our house. It's like a really special place in New York now.
The Hughes Lumber TimberTech sale is going on now. Come in soon.
Welcome to the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED. Give Bill a call at 541-770-5633. That's 770-KMED.
Appreciate you being here as always. It is 7:58. A few more emails of the day. I wanted to get to some of these. A lot of people wrote about the conversations we were having on the Klamath River dam removal, and especially the conversation with the doctor, Dr. Summerton, who was talking about the fact that she was just hoping that could we start telling the truth about what's actually happening, what's actually being, you know, going down that river. The dams aren't coming back. But the happy talk and the uncritical, the out-and-out lies or distortions of, yeah, the fish are now swimming in the clear water of the Klamath, that really is not happening right now. So we'll have a little bit of that, though. We'll have a little bit of that. A lot of people wrote me about that. Some emails of the day sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson and Central Point Family Dentistry, as always, centralpointfamilydentistry.com. And Bob Shan writes me, Bill, hey, you know, we have our very own love canal, too. Bear Creek at Jackson Street. The shopping carts have been removed. Not so for the concrete conflagrations that are conflagulations, rather, that are a barrier to fish passage. Bedford leadership loves the focus on the Klamath, not so much in their own backyard. All right, Bob. That's not to denigrate what's going on over at Bear Creek, but I think they are actually working on it. I can't exactly say it's the same sort of disaster as sending millions upon millions of cubic yards of sediment down a supposedly wild river, okay? Now then, Patrick writes, Bill, seriously, that water sample from the Klamath River is apparently a toxic soup. Few questions concerning that. What does your master gardener Stan think would happen if plants were given a dose of that water? B, what cities in California get their water from the Klamath? C, what difficulties do city municipalities run into trying to filter out these contaminants? And D, what do city municipalities do with the contaminants filtered out of the water? Those are great questions. Just I don't know. I don't know, Patrick, but I appreciate you bringing those up. I don't know. Are there any municipalities using the Klamath for their municipal water? Or is it most of this well water? I don't know. Okay. Let's see. Ed writes me this morning about the salmon issue, and I guess was taking issue with what the doctor had said about the salmon looking around for different places to spawn if their original spawning ground is not. He brought me some research from the Fed that said salmon come back to the stream where they were born because they know it's a good place to spawn. They won't waste time looking for a stream with good habitat and other salmon. Scientists believe that salmon navigate by using the Earth's magnetic field like a compass, and when they find the river they came from, they start using smell to find their way back to their home stream. They build their smell memory bank when they start migrating to the ocean as young fish. If a salmon can't find its stream, some continue to search for the right stream until they use up all their energy and die. But most simply try to find other salmon with which to spawn. All right, Ed, I appreciate that. Michael wrote me, too. He says, Bill, I just drove across the Klamath at the I-5 bridge a few days ago. The river looks like it does after a hard rain. Dark, certainly not clear. Hans Albuquerque writes me this morning, it's Congress's fault? Bill, so let me get this straight. We have immigration laws in place. We were even building a big bad wall to stop more illegal aliens. Brandon and Cackler get handed a stolen election. They loosen or ignore historical laws set by Congress. Then last night on 60 Minutes, the Cackler blames, drum roll please, Congress. Hans Albuquerque. Hans, I get that. I really do get it. Email Bill at BillMyersShow.com. We'll have some more of those coming up. It's 8 o'clock. This is KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG Grants Pass.